Episode 468 is this one right here. As an intelligent person, are you continually wondering why you keep sabotaging yourself, be it with food, relationships, money, or career, or family, or any life decision, even when logically you know better? If you heard that and thought, yep, that's me, then this episode is for you, because we speak with someone that has an extensive background in psychology and behavior change that breaks down exactly how to stop operating from your wounded child or rebellious teenager energy and actually show up as an adult, the adult that you want to be. In here, we talk about things like triggers. We talk about the people that trigger you, the things that trigger you. We talk about setting personal standards. We talk about self-acceptance. We talk about the idea of self-love. Is it good? Is it bad? We talk about healing the child stuff that is still ruining your life now. And so, without further ado, let's get into that conversation.
Welcome to the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. You've tuned in because you want to start taking your health seriously so you don't, well, get sick and die. Here we talk all things health, nutrition, and human optimization. Let's jump into it with your host and resident scientist, Maddie Lansdowne.
What's up, my healthy friends? I hope you are having a fabulous day. Whenever I start the day with a podcast conversation, I know it's going to be a good day, despite the newborn baby era that I'm in with 3 hours sleep. So that's a lot of fun. All right. So this year, it's my mission to support 500 people to achieve real weight loss. And by real, I mean what's really weighing you down. We need to get rid of that stuff. Not just the scale, not just the numbers, not calories. We do the much deeper mindset work behind yo-yo dieting and binge emotional and overeating. And so today's chat is actually really going to lean into some of these topics that we talk about and explore as part of that emotional binge overeating work. And so if you're at all interested in looking into that, looking at what we do, exploring how we might be able to help, the link's down in the show notes below. So scroll down, click the link, book in a conversation, and we'll see if we can support you. All right. So today I'm talking with Michelle Chalfont, a licensed therapist and creator of the Adult Chair Model. She's helped millions of people via her podcast, which has been on the air for over 10 years. She's like a podcast OG. She's helped people like you and I to break free from emotional patterns that keep us stuck, doing the stuff we don't want to do but keep doing. She also recently dropped her new book called The Adult Chair, and right now she's hanging out with me. So Michelle, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Maddie. This is so, I know it's going to be a fun conversation. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for indulging my conversation about newborn babies before we hit record.
I love it. I love it. It's going to be fun. Thank you.
No worries. So I've got a theory which seems to be collecting a good amount of data, although it's only me collecting it, that most of the best sort of or most powerful healing work comes from people who've had to figure out their own mess first. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I'm really curious about your journey. Like, what was the moment that you realized maybe you were getting it all wrong, or you were fed up with a long history of poor decisions or poor reactions or just shitty scenarios that kept showing up in your life?
Hold on a second. What'd you ask me? When was the point of when I realized that? Is that what you...
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Early on, I was in my 20s. Like, that was a long time ago. I realized, like, what is happening? Like, what is happening with me? And how am I supposed to heal myself, transform my life? I didn't know where to go, what to do. I'm a slight bit older than you, Maddie.
You don't look it.
When I was young, there was no internet. When I was in college, it was like the internet was just sort of becoming a thing. And people were like, is this thing going to stay around? It reminds me of AI. You know how people say now, is AI going to be here for a long time? I'm like, yes. This is what everybody said about cell phones and the internet. So yeah, so in my 20s is when I realized, like, wow, I really need some help. What's out there? And all of these questions started going through my mind. And that's when I really, really started seeking. And I knew always, though, that I was inside. I was a seeker and I always loved helping people. So it was like the perfect storm. I was in college struggling with some anxiety and depression, and probably in high school too, honestly, but didn't know it because I was functioning and I was functionally depressed. But yeah, in my early 20s, I was like, it's time I really take a look at myself. What's happening here? Something's not right in what's going on out there, because I knew I wasn't the only one too. So I just started this quest of learning all about healing and transformation, limiting beliefs, all the things. Health and wellness, all of it. Like in my 20s. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's definitely where it started for me, early 20s as well. When you said limiting beliefs, like I found that before I had any level of self-awareness, the idea of limiting beliefs made no sense to me because I thought, what do you mean? I got my brain, I can think about anything. But for you, what were those initial limiting beliefs that you identified as something that was holding you back?
Yeah, I made the assumption that I hated myself because I had such bad thoughts. I mean, my thoughts were just constant and they were negative one after the next. So I made this assumption. I said, you know what? I must hate myself the way that I speak to myself because it's nasty. Yeah. So I realized that has to be a belief because I can't seem to quote unquote get rid of it. Like, how do I move beyond this belief? I couldn't figure out how to do it. I couldn't just say, stop thinking like that because the thoughts kept coming. And I was getting, I think, an undergrad or a master's in psychology and counseling. And I think that's when I realized, like, oh, it's a belief because this thing won't go away. It must be like hardwired inside of me. So I got to figure out a way to flip it. So I had deducted that, hey, if I am so hateful, I think the way around this or the way to heal this or transform it is to then learn how to love myself. So that was when I went blazing down this path and I still am on it. Like, I just love the work I get to do of building self-love and self-worth and everything that goes along with it. And because what I found is when we learn these things, like that to me is such the core of who we are. And if that's solid, holy moly, like everything, like people pleasing, codependency, boundary setting, all the things that I talk about and work with, they start to improve when we have a really solid foundation anew of who we are.
Do you think that foundation of who we are is rooted in those limiting beliefs that were maybe handed to us by the perpetrator or our parents or even people that didn't mean to harm us because they were operating from their own wounded self? Because I feel like that's part of the hard thing about or the difficult thing about the work is untethering who we are from who we believe ourselves to be as maybe the wounded version of ourselves.
So true. Yeah. From the age of 0 to 6, this is what's so crazy. So in the adult chair book that I have, the actual model is based on 3 developmental stages of our lives. And this is the thing that blows my mind more than anything, is that the first 6 years of our lives are they're foundational for who we are today as adults. And so many things happen during those first 6 years. That's the phase I call the child chair. So that's when we're developing as children. So we're learning all about emotions, emotional needs, such as I need to be held, I need to know that I'm lovable. All of these things are emotional needs. We also learn about intimacy because having a baby, you hold that little baby up close to you and you're comfortable with that. And so the baby is feeling that, like, oh, my daddy, he's not awkward with me. I like being just cuddled up with him. We learn about vulnerability. You will find out, Maddie, at some point that your child will be screaming, yelling in the restaurant, will not care. But you as an adult won't do that. But children, they just don't care. They're vulnerable. They'll tell you how they feel. They'll cry in front of anybody. Think about this as an adult. We're not going to cry in front of anybody. We actually build this shell around us so we don't do those things. But kids are vulnerable. Kids are passionate. Kids are spontaneous. Sorry, I can't say that. But anyway, so all of these things happen from the ages of 0 to 6. The other thing that happens, which is mind-boggling to me, is that by the time we're around 6, we have built the roadmap for which we live off of the rest of our lives. So we absorb everything in our environment from the ages of 0 to 6 without, this is a key word, without discernment. So let me give you an example. If I am coming home from school and I'm so excited to show my mommy my finger painting and I'm 4 years old or 5 years old and I go running in the bedroom and the bedroom lights are turned off and she's in bed and it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon and I'm screaming, mommy, look at what I made today at school and I'm so excited. And my mommy turns around and screams and yells at me, tells me to get the hell out of the bedroom, turn off the lights, yada, yada, yada. Immediately, I'm covered in shame. I'm covered in I'm not good enough. I'm covered in I'm bad. Who knows? I'm making it up. But the beliefs or thoughts like that, that then form into beliefs because I don't have the discernment to say to myself, because I don't have a prefrontal cortex till I'm 25 years old, where I say to myself, oh, wait, mommy has a migraine again. this happened last week. This isn't about me. She just doesn't want the lights on. It burns her. It makes her headache worse. So this isn't about me. I should not take this personally. But you know what? As kids, we don't have that. We take it all on as truth. And that's an extreme example. But of course, think about all the little things that happen in your life. When you're little, we are literally sponges. There is no gray. Is it like this or is it like that? That is what we are taking in. I'm good. I'm bad. I am lovable. I'm not accepted. My brother is bullying me. My parents are not stopping it. It must be that I deserve it. So it's like all of these things get, they land then on this roadmap from what, I mean, imagine, think back to how old you were when you were 6 years old. Everybody listen, or everybody that is listening, think back to the year it was when you were six. And then think about a roadmap that was created in that year. Now try to drive your car around using that roadmap. It's outdated. We need to update the roadmap. So on the roadmap are these beliefs, like I said, I'm not lovable. Money is hard. It takes a lot of hard work to make money. No, people leave me. I worked with a woman the other day and she was saying she was 50 years old. She's having a hard time with her relationships. She had a daughter and she was dating this new guy. And I said, what's going on? We actually were doing work on a podcast. I was her guest. And I said, what's happening in your relationship with this guy? And she said, I'm just not right. I don't know what's happening. And anyway, I just asked her a few questions and she said, oh my God. She said, well, I have a belief that he's going to leave. And I said, where'd you get that belief? Where did it come from? She said, well, when I was five, my parents got a divorce. My mother, hear this, this is interesting. My mother asked my father for a divorce when I was four, and my dad left the house when I was five. And she says, so here I am, a 50-year-old woman. I understand daddy didn't leave or abandon me, but for some reason, I have this overwhelming feeling inside that he abandoned me and he left. She goes, but logically, it doesn't make sense. Why do I feel like that? I said, because you absorbed that belief. You made up a story around why daddy left when you were four or five. You didn't have the prefrontal cortex to say, oh, wait, but mom asked him for a divorce. Mom asked him to leave. So what you interpreted in your little kid brain was daddy left. It must be because of me. I'm bad. Men leave. And then all of these beliefs get formed. They plop down right on her roadmap. She's 50 years old, still dealing with it because it's unknown. It's in the unconscious mind. So that's the most mind-blowing thing to me that we all live like this. You can't escape it. So we've got to work on updating our map of the limiting beliefs.
I'm curious because there's so many people that you would work with, that I work with. And the interesting thing about psychotherapy and psychology is that a lot of people that are attracted to these conversations are intelligent people because the mind is as deep as you want it to be. And so I feel like we run into these clients, and I would say I am also one of these clients that leans into this intelligence bias of like, oh, it has to be deep and complex and interwoven. And because if I can understand, that validates my own level of self-perception of intelligence. But at the same time, no matter how much we intellectualize it, we end up back at the same conversation, which you highlighted, which is logically, I can understand what's going on, but emotionally, I'm still behaving in the same way, or I'm not changing, because no matter how much logic we pile on, it's like, I'm still not changing. So like, where does the transition from logic as an adult, like from logic into the feelings and into being able to rewrite what those feelings are and what they mean?
Yeah. That's a great question. I mean, there are many ways that we can change our beliefs, but one of my favorite ways is through triggers. I know this sounds crazy. This is why I say that triggers are a gift. If we learn how to work with our triggers, they become one of the greatest gifts to ourselves, because triggers reveal our unknown or unconscious beliefs that are buried within ourselves. And the way that, and I have a whole section in my book on triggers. I literally walk people through, this is how you work a trigger, 7-step process with experiential exercises in it. It's a very simple process, but emotionally speaking, you've got to be willing to do the work around it, which is looking at your beliefs. So the way that I look at triggers is, or the way that most people look at triggers is, Maddie, you made me feel bad. So therefore I'm mad at you. I'm going to call my mom, my sister, my friends, and let them know how mean Maddie was. They're going to validate me. And guess what happens? That beautiful belief that has risen up when you triggered me, it's right on a silver platter in front of me. When I get validated by all these other people over here, that belief, because I'm not looking at it, starts to fall back into the unconscious mind. And then I don't know about it anymore. And I'm validated. Actually, what it's doing is it's strengthening my ego instead of actually wiping the slate clean. So what we want to do instead is, let's just pretend that you trigger me and you say something or do something or something happens. I feel uncomfortable. Let's think about what a trigger is. We might feel knots in our stomach, angry, overwhelmed, want to get small, want to get big, whatever it is. We all know what a trigger feels like. But what we want to do instead, and sometimes it's hard to do in the moment, so you can shelf it and do it later. But what we want to do, the work is around asking ourselves, okay, not why did this happen to me? Why did Maddie do that to me? But instead, I wonder why this is happening for me. What is this? What am I feeling? What am I feeling because of what Maddie said or did? What is it that I'm experiencing? So most people say right off the bat, well, I'm angry or I'm frustrated or I'm irritated or whatever it might be. Okay, cool. What's under that? And you just keep going under. And what we find is, and I've done this 25 years with people, what we find every time is that at the bottom is the root. There's the belief that's on your roadmap that then we can update. So we go under. And then we say, okay, wait a minute. It started out with anger. And what I realized was when Maddie, I don't know, let's just say you had to cancel the podcast. Let's just pretend. And I then realized that underneath my anger was this feeling of I'm left out and I'm not wanted and I'm invisible. Boom, boom, boom. I'm going to go all the way down to it. I'm invisible. And how does that make you feel? You'll realize when you hit that tap root, like that root at the bottom, you can't go any lower. And it's like, feel that. Then you ask yourself, is it true that in this day, in 2025, am I still invisible? Well, no. I mean, my child sees me, my husband, my friend, my mother, my whomever. Just find one person. You don't have to find 20. One person that is the exact opposite, that can create the exact opposite belief of what you're experiencing. And then you feel that the whole way that we have to, or the main way that we change these beliefs is after we find that taproot, you've got to feel it in the body, not just think it, chin up. You got to go chin down and feel it. Okay. So I'm feeling, this is why people go, oh, I don't want to do that. Yes, do it. Because you move through it. You know what I mean? Like we have to move through these difficult emotions. When we move through, we go, well, that wasn't so bad. It's like, yeah, it wasn't so bad. But then we go into what now, what else is true? Well, I'm actually really seen. I mean, my husband sees me all the time and the people that I work with, they really see me. How does that feel? It feels wonderful. Okay. So then perhaps your new updated belief is no different than updating your phone. Do you update your phones? Yes. We all update our phones. No problem. It's like, we've got to update our beliefs. We are computers in a way, just like our phones, just like our laptops. We need updating.
Yeah, I love everything you just shared. And I think that the updating is a really great sort of, the phone update is a really good analogy. The thing that I'm curious about though is like, no matter how much logic and deep dive we do and talk therapy and analyzing and understanding, especially with the mother and the father wound, for all of us really, like it feels like that is an update that is really hard to shift for many people, or it takes a long time and they, even in the face of lots of evidence that they've got great lives and great friends and a great job, and I've proven myself to be worthy of love and success and amazing, but they've still got these repetitive patterns because of what happened when they were seven or what happened when they were five. And because it's our parental figures, like it feels so much harder to update that belief.
I love doing, again, I do a lot of parts work in the adult chair model, and I have a coaching program. This is the main part of what I teach in this coach, in the coaching program. It's my version of parts work. I've never done IFS training, even though I'm a therapist, because I've done for 20 years more of a spiritual sort of parts work. So I do a lot with reparenting, the child that actually is the wounded part of us. And by reparenting that little kid inside and letting that kid know what they needed to hear when they were younger that they didn't hear. Oh my God, it's the most beautiful work. It doesn't take years. It's not just talking. It's not talk therapy that I do with anybody. It's like, you're truly, let's update these programs. And you can do that beautifully with parts work, inner child work, all that kind of thing. And it's powerful. I mean, it's absolutely powerful work.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I do a lot of parts work. And actually, the session I was on before, we just jumped on. I did a bunch of parts work, but I've also never done IFS as well. It's just something that I've sort of, I guess, figured out through my own healing journey of like, oh, separating my mind and seeing who's driving the bus. And so, and then I found IFS later and I was like, oh, have I plagiarized an idea that I felt like I organically had?
Nope. We're all tapping into the same consciousness, right?
Totally. I'm curious with triggers. Like, how do we discern like the difference between a trigger that's our limiting belief where, you know, practically in reality right now, we might actually be in the wrong versus genuinely being annoyed and being like, actually, that isn't okay. Like, because I think as well, when we go through this journey, I know that I did, there was a point where I was just like, oh my God, I'm always wrong about everything. Once, because I'd sort of swung really deep into that like healing, self-analysis, understanding, taking responsibility for everything. And I'm sort of out the other side well and truly now, but I'm curious for people listening, like, because I think you swing into that world a little bit and then you just feel like you're responsible for everything. You're like, oh my God, I'm just ruining everyone's lives all of the time and mine.
So true. And it's a great question. So your question is, how do you know if it's trigger work or are you just angry or overwhelmed?
Yeah.
It's a great, I love this question. Here's how you know. Are you carrying it with you 30 minutes later, an hour later? So let me give you an example. If you're going to the grocery store and you pull it, or any store, you're waiting for a spot and someone comes in and you've been waiting there for a couple of minutes and someone comes ripping around the corner, the car pulls out, they go in and they take your spot. You are ticked off. It's raining. It was a close spot. I wanted that spot. This jerk just pulls in and grabs my spot. I'm angry. I'm frustrated. If I'm still talking about it, thinking about it 30 minutes later or more, that's a trigger. Versus I'm just angry. Here's what's beautiful. When you have done your personal work, you can reach a place where you're truly not triggered. And I speak from so much experience on this. I was so emotionally dysregulated in my probably my late teens, early 20s, until I started learning all this work. What I found was I went from living high, low, high, low, high, low to not flatline. That's not healthy, but more of this, like a little bit up and a little bit down, a little bit up and a little bit down. That's healthy. And when you do this work, this trigger process, you actually can live a life that's just so much more in balance. I remember I had a friend of mine, or she was a good friend of mine, who was going through a lot of different stuff with her. She was getting a divorce, all this stuff. And one day we're on the phone, I can't remember what I said to her, but the reaction that I got from her was all out full on rage, like no joke. It was legit rage. And she is blasting me. And I'm sitting here on the other end of the phone. And I remember thinking to myself, I wasn't angry. Here's the difference. Cause I feel like I'm like, I've done nothing wrong. I'm not, this isn't about me. And when you've done enough work, there's this tipping point that I found that started happening with me. I was like, wait a minute. It's not that I don't apologize. I absolutely do that. It's not that I don't take responsibility. That is something I absolutely do. If I've made a mistake or if I've hurt someone, but in this case, I hadn't. And the thing she was saying to me, she was acting like she was mad at me and screaming at me, but it was more of a projection around her pain. And because I had done, and I'd gotten to this point of doing so much work, I was able to see it. So she's literally, Maddie, no joke, it was full on rage for like 15 minutes. And I just sat there and she's raging on me. And then you did this and then this, and this makes me mad. And I remember listening to her and I thought, this is so cool. And I remember thinking these thoughts to this day. I'm so glad that this girl, this friend of mine is able to do this, that she feels safe enough to do this with me. Because I knew her backstory. She basically raised herself. Her parents acted like, now I don't know them, so I can't quote them. They acted like they didn't care. When she was in high school, she never had a curfew. they just didn't pay attention to her. So that created a lot of emotional pain for her.
Do you want to know how to lose weight without counting calories or needing to use restrictive diets? Turns out the answer is on Instagram. You might be interested to know that over 70% of our paying clients begin their journey with a weight loss goal. Most of them achieve this goal without fad diets and without calorie counting. And in the process, they also rewire their brains to stop craving sugar, and they stop their secret binge eating sessions without the need to use loads of willpower. Why does what we do work? Because the fat that you want to lose, it isn't just about the calories you're consuming. It's actually wild how differently we do things. We work on your mind and your body gets better. And I think more people need to know about how we can do this for you too, which is exactly why I'm back on Instagram as The Real Weight Loss Coach. If you want to know how to really drop the weight that's been holding you down, how to keep it off, and to stay healthy long into the future, then follow me on Instagram. The link to my profile is in the show notes below, or you can search for me on Instagram by typing in The Real Weight Loss Coach. Give me a follow and I'll chat to you in the comments and the DMs over there.
So all this wounding of hers was coming out toward me and I wasn't letting it land on me. I was kind of letting it fly by. But I remember thinking, I'm really glad that she's able to react in this way because she's never been able to do this with anyone and I'm going to be safe for her. You can say whatever you want to me. It's not going to shake me. I don't care. And then I remember she was like, and I need you to do this and stop doing that. And I thought, I remember thinking, this is cool. Now she's setting boundaries. I love it. I actually was celebrating the rage that she was having on me. I knew it wasn't about me, but that's the level that we can get to. I don't care if it's with your friend or family. I've had family members as well, similar things, or they get mad at me or whatever. And I'm like, it's not mine. And when the healthier that we become, the more self-worth that we build, that's what this whole book of the Adult Chair book is all about, how we do this. It's the how-to manual for how to build up this healthy sense of self. It's not to say that nothing bothers me because I'm still human, but I don't take on everyone else's stuff and say that it's mine. And then I got to go fix you. I mean, if you look up codependency in Wikipedia, my picture might as well have been there. I was like, here I am.
Mine was so next to yours.
Honest to God, yeah. I mean, I know that so well. I know people pleasing really well. I know lack of boundaries really well. I can see it a mile away. So, but yeah, when we start working with ourselves, our sense of self and empowerment and worth grows. And we can actually be in situations like that. And what I find, even I continue it, I see through it. My husband's mad at me. I'm like, this is not about me. I don't say that to him in the moment, of course. But I can recognize that so much of what we do as humans is just projections. And it's oftentimes, quite often, not ours to claim. So I just don't let it land. I just go, yeah, I'm not letting, that's not mine. But I'll listen and I'm with you. I'm not going to ignore you. I'm not going to yell back. So does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. A thought that's popping up for me at the moment is, because I guess we could self-analyze any boundary that we put in place, right? Because let's say originally the boundary or hard line that we've got is actually irrational because of our trauma and our exposure and our upbringing.
Right.
But if we heal and get to a place where we're putting these boundaries in a place that we would, most people would deem healthy and safe, but we could also assess that and say, oh, maybe I shouldn't, maybe that boundary is too close to the edge, or because at what point do we actually have boundaries that protect us that we are allowed to get angry about, that we are allowed to defend, that it's like, nope, you cross this line and that results in a version of me that comes out to protect myself? Because it's like, where is the line where it's like, I'm untriggerable, but also I am willing to defend myself in scenarios where a boundary has been violated?
Absolutely. I mean, I love talking about boundaries too. It's one of my... Now, I wouldn't have said this in the past, but it's become one of my superpowers. No, it was not in the beginning of time, let me tell you that. But I love boundaries. And yes, there are times where I absolutely speak up and I say, okay, it's time for a boundary. So, but here's the thing. And for all the years that I worked with my clients, I would say or suggest sometimes, hey, how about setting a boundary? It sounds like that might need to happen. People would say to me, oh no, I'm not confrontational. I'm not doing that. I'm like, if I heard that once, I heard it like 1,000 times. I'm not confrontational. Boundaries are not confrontational. Let me say it again. Healthy boundaries are not confrontational. They don't require rage and screaming. In fact, those are explosive. That's explosive. That's explosive energy or emotion coming at someone. It's very unhealthy. I can set a badass boundary. Like I can set some mean boundary, like mean meaning like tough, like I got myself, right? Mm-hmm. But quite often it's a conversation. What I find is I'm just not emotionally amped up like I used to be in my younger years to the point where I have to be like, stop doing that to me. That's not right. That's an unhealthy boundary. Now I'll say when the person over there that's irritating me or saying whatever, I'll say, you know what? We need to have a conversation because this is not okay with me. Let's talk about this. But I set the tone for how the meeting's going to go, how the conversation's going to go down. Now, if someone is yelling in my face, you better believe it. I'm going to walk away. I'm going to raise my voice and tell them to calm down and do not talk to me like that. I'm going to do that. That happens so infrequently compared to my younger years of my life. It just doesn't happen anymore because I'm setting the tone. It's like, what's okay with me? I don't want to be screamed at anymore. I don't allow that rage anymore. What the story I just told you was probably 15 plus years ago. But even now, like my husband's getting irritated. I'll look at him and I'll think, and I can feel it, the energy. I'm like, wow, that's like, and it's not from a making fun of place, but you start to be able to see through it. Like, oh, this is like a younger version of him speaking right now. It's not even him, but I'm going to listen. I'm going to be present. And I'm going to answer him in a different way. I'm not mad. I'm not angry like I used to get. That's the biggest difference, I think. So yeah, I'll speak up if someone is in my face or if someone is yelling at me. But if someone's screaming at me, they are dysregulated. I don't want to tangle with that. That's not healthy. I can walk away, hang up the phone, whatever I need to do. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, totally. It's like being able to see the Matrix.
Yes, it is. It shocked me. Let me tell you what, I wasn't always able to see this, but other people have said this too. They're like, wow, you really start seeing through the illusion. I'm like, yeah, you start to see how much humans, how often we are simply projecting our wounding or our stuff out there in the world on other people. And when you start noticing that, it almost becomes kind of fun. It's like, okay, this isn't mine. I'm not going to get upset. It's not mine.
Or that you end up down that rabbit hole of just psychoanalyzing everything to the nth degree, which I'm so guilty of. I love pulling things apart and like, oh, maybe it's because of this. Maybe it's because of this. Maybe it's because of this.
Yes, I love that too. I love to analyze. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my partner has a background in psychology and she works with relationships and stuff. And so between the two of us, we are just pulling the universe apart into tiny little pieces.
I love it. Relationships are like the best way to see our stuff and to work on our stuff. Yes. It's rising up all the time. It's so great.
Yeah, totally. Something you mentioned before early on was about sort of learning to love yourself and self-love. Mm-hmm. And I want to go into that from the lens of, I think self-love gets a bit of, well, two perspectives. One, a lot of people run towards it because it sounds like the golden rainbow and abyss and of happiness and it's all fantastic. And then the other side of it is, I guess, the criticism of self-love, which is that we're just leading into a delusional part or experience of and being in denial of the truth. And so I'm wondering if we could just have that conversation around what you mean by self-love and navigating that transition. Because I think, yeah, I've definitely bared witness to people being in that sort of, let's say, toxic positivity, denial state of self-love, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. When I hear that, what you're saying, like the toxic positivity, when people are like, oh, just be happy. And it's like, no, you're living chin. That call that living chin up because it's all head stuff. It's all thoughts and mental. Mm-hmm. When you really live from a place of self-love, it's this embodiment feeling. It's chin down. It's like living below the chin. It's a feeling that you have. It's not a thought. It's a feeling. But it honestly has a lot to do with thoughts because one of the ways that we build self-love and what my journey, and I found this from other people as well, is you start with maybe thinking you're okay or you got the negative thoughts or the loud inner critic or whatever it might be. So we don't jump from, hey, I'm there to, oh, I love myself. That's all in your head. That's not going to happen, right? But it's a journey of moving from where you are today to moving up the ladder a little bit by a little bit by a little bit. And then you start noticing that the self-talk is a little different, how you feel about yourself. We want to become, in the book, the five pillars are part two of the adult chair book. this is the journey that I take people on to build exactly what you're talking about. It's an experiential journey of learning how to love yourself and build self-worth. So one of the pillars, the second pillar, is I practice self-compassion. What I found is when I learned how to cultivate self-compassion, and I've taught this to so many people now, everything started to change. So they had the thoughts like, okay, wait, that thought doesn't feel good. I'm going to choose this other thought. Think it, feel it. Again, you drop it below the chin, feel it, feel it, feel it. And their inner critic started shifting and changing and morphing. And of course, we can do parts work around that as well. But that self-compassion, woof, people started saying, I think I kind of like myself. And it felt like uncomfortable for so many people to say that. I think I might like who I am. Great. Wow, I think I love myself. And how do we know? We start having this unconditional acceptance for self. We give ourselves grace. If we make a mistake, we just apologize and we recognize, hey, I'm human. I'm a good person. I apologize. I take ownership of that. And we just move on. With a more self-compassion, it's like this muscle starts to grow within. And we go from liking to loving maybe different aspects of self and then more of the self. And it's, I think married to that is, of course, unconditional acceptance as well. Like, okay, I can accept that that's who I am. Okay, I'm a good person. And it's kind of boring, honestly, when we get there. We're so good at being hard on ourselves, right? Like we're so good at the inner critic. Everybody knows I can beat up on myself all day long. And everyone goes, oh yeah, I get it. But if I start saying, oh, I really like who I am. And again, it's not anything you have to put on Facebook or social media, but just talking about, I really like how I always start with my people, like start basic. Like I like how I make the bed. I'm really good at it. Or I really like cooking. I like the garden that I just put together outside. I can't wait to see what comes this summer with everything that's in the garden. Or I'm really great with my children. I love children. Or I like shopping. Or what are the things that you love to do? I mean, I love making a great breakfast for everybody. Like we miss all of those things every day, all day that we really are good at, that we enjoy. We don't validate ourselves. So we got to learn how to self-validate so we can build that muscle of, hold on, I'm going to pay attention to all the good stuff I do every day.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. And it's, we've got such a natural bias, and arguably the bias comes from evolutionary psychology of prioritizing survival, but we have such a bias to focusing on the negative. Even with some of the most messed up people, there's so many fantastic attributes about them on a day-to-day basis, and they might be so small and minute to them that impact other people, but we hyperfixate on the really bad things. And sure, we've all got or had really bad things that needed to change, but I'm curious with the self-compassion, oh, actually more so the unconditional aspect of what you're talking about, is where does the lack of condition slip into like a lack of standard? Basically, if we have no conditions on self-acceptance and self-love and all of these kind of things, there's no conditions on them whatsoever, does that mean we're susceptible to dropping the standard at which we show up at? Because I guess there's possibly a slippery slope in there for self-compassion becoming, or self-acceptance becoming, excuses for not fixing and for not changing and for this is just who I am. So I'm just curious if there's some kind of because for me, and maybe this is maybe a more masculine thing, like I'm definitely don't feel that the way that I feel about myself is conditionless, because then I would be a reckless drunk that went to the strippers all the time. Like, because I would be listening to my biological impulses only, right? And that's an extreme example. And I've just, for everybody, I haven't been that person ever. but you understand, like, I think for myself, at least, and at least maybe it's a more masculine thing, I don't know, but this standard is important. Maintaining a standard is important, and that requires having conditions, because if I don't operate within those conditions, then I'm beginning to fail at who I'm supposed to be as a father, as a provider, as a family member, as a practitioner, all of those things.
I would say that I understand your question, but I know that just in the clients that I've worked with for 20 some years, that when we begin to do this work and you do it well, and you really are really working your stuff, you're going to become more embodied. And this is not an airy-fairy thing by any means. You're going to become more connected to your heart. And when you're connected to your heart, you're more connected to your true self. And you're not going to have the desire to do the things that you're talking about. So when you think about standards, I'm thinking when you say that to me, what comes to my mind is that kind of like, it feels more mental to me, or what I call chin up. Like, oh, well, if I just do this, no. This is a journey of the whole self. This is not just a journey where I'm flipping around a belief and it's gone. We are actually working within the body. And I believe that we are energy beings first. We are truly energy beings in human suits, having a human experience. We're not humans having a spiritual experience. We're spiritual beings here having this very human experience. And life can be hard. But when we can learn to navigate from a new way, which is we're learning to work with the body, we're working in a big thing that I've talked about for a long time, our feeling, our emotions. We as humans, that's one of my pillars. That's one of the five pillars in the Adult Chair book. I really take people on this journey of how do we even do that? We are so disconnected from ourselves. We don't know who we are. Most of us exist from what I would call more of a false self with these masks, because we learn at a very young age again. Oh, you don't want me to do this. You want me to be like this. Okay, I'll do that. Oh, you think this is funny when I do this? I'll do that. And every time we put a new mask on, we're abandoning our true self a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. So by the time I would start working with people, I don't care how old they were, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. I'm working with an 80-year-old right now. And the same thing is the 20-year-old. I don't care how much money you have. I don't care where you live in the world. We are not great at staying connected with our emotions. Because if we did stay connected, we'd feel the pain of when we got something wrong, of when we made a mistake, of when you didn't laugh at my joke when we were a little kid. So I morph who I am. Wait a minute, let me change who I am. And we do it in the small doses, right? A little bit. But before we know it, then we become these adults. And that's then when people are coming to see me or you or one of my coaches, and they're like, wait, I don't know who I am. Why am I so unhappy? Why am I living with anxiety? Why am I binge eating? What is happening with me? I don't understand. Because I'll tell you what, you weren't born like this. We aren't born like this. But we learn to become who other people want us to be. So we stay connected into our tribe, our family, our community, our church, whatever it is that you want to be a tribe or a member of. We change who we are on the outside and on the inside to fit in. So this work that I'm talking about doing, and I believe the work that you do, is to help people to connect or reconnect back inside of self. That's where the true healing happens. And when we do that, we show up as better and better and better humans, because we're living from the heart. Again, it's not an airy-fairy thing. It's a very healthy thing.
Yeah, I'm regularly sharing with people short sentence of the feeling is the healing. Yeah. And the frustrating thing about that for many people is, well, how long is this feeling going to last? And I'm like, well, how long is a piece of string? Because for some people, it might be one experience that transforms them. For some people, we need to revisit it and let the anger out or let the sadness out multiple times. But yeah, like you said, chin up. We're such a heady species, or at least the modern incarnation of us are. And when we're not doing, like practically doing something with our hands or like walking to a meeting, it's like, so I just sit here and feel? But what do I do about it? And it's like, in the work I do, that's a really important part of the process, is the just sitting in the mud, feeling the sadness, feeling the pain. And the sort of way that I think about it is that it's not airy-fairy either, because it's neurotransmitters, it's hormones, it's your nervous system, all of which are in your physical body. And that part of your body needs to feel it for it to be processed and released and turned into maybe energy that can evaporate outside of you in order to actually let go, right?
It's the mush. You see this picture here? You're the caterpillar, you're in the mush, and then you turn into the butterfly. The mush,
totally.
This is where you feel the emotions right there, exactly like what you're saying. You've got to be willing to go through it. I was just speaking with a guy the other day, and I said, he's trying to make a jump in his company. He's like, I don't know why I'm stuck. I said, you're stuck because you haven't looked at all this stuff from your past. And it's not to say you have to spend years and years on this stuff, but you got to go through it. You got to be willing to take a look. Look under the hood of the car, see what's going on, go in there, and then you're out. You got to go in and out. And I said, you were not wanted as a child. He was an oops baby when his mom was in college. And I said, and your dad didn't want you either. Let's talk about this. Let's name it, because you don't want to say it. I'm going to say it because I know it's going to help you to heal this and move through it and transform it. You got to be willing to go into the pain of not feeling wanted. He's a big people pleaser. I mean, his whole life, I'm looking at this guy and go, oh my God, like the way you show up in your job and with your family is from a people pleaser perspective because you don't feel like you're wanted. When you can go into that feeling of not feeling wanted and feel it, you will come out the other side. I don't know as who, but it will change you. I promise you. And he's like, let's do it. So yeah, that's next.
Yeah, amazing. Because you are amazing and all of the work you do is so great and you're such a fun energy to spend time with. Where can everybody find you online and get your stuff and get into your world?
Oh, I would just say go to theadultchair.com. And I know that you're in Australia and you probably have people from all over that side of the world listening. So if you want to get the book, there are links at theadultchair.com/book. And anyone that gets the book, just put your little receipt number in there. And there's a free 2-hour masterclass really taking you through the whole journey of the book. People absolutely loved it. I'm like, it was like a pre-order special. I said, let's keep it on there. People just blew up about it. And I said, okay, well, here you go. I'm gonna keep that up for at least another month or so for anybody that does buy the book. Because I'm just so grateful to be putting this work out there. People have been waiting for this for a long time. So,
Incredible. Yeah. I'll put those links down below so everybody will be able to scroll down, click the link and jump into your world. And I guess to wrap our conversation up for today, at least, what is one piece of health information that you wish more people knew about?
Okay. It's funny because we were just talking about this, but the one piece of health information that more people were talking about, and I think a lot of people are talking about this. I don't know that they're linking it to health, would be to feel your emotions. You talk about it and I talk about it. More people need to be talking about this because people are really unaware of how linked our physical bodies are to our emotional health. And I believe it's starting to come out more and more and more. I was speaking with a guy who does an irritable bowel podcast and I was on and I said, you're missing the mark here. This is not about supplements and herbs. This is about what is going on that is creating the block inside the body. I said, and that means what emotions are these? Are people not feeling? Where do you not want to go? Because when you start moving the emotions by feeling them, the energy of the body starts to move and release and metabolize emotions and stuck pain. He was like, oh my God. It was a fun show too. But yeah, I really believe that if we could learn how to feel our emotions, we'd stay so much more connected to our bodies. And when we do that, it's a superpower. Our intuition goes up. We have downloads about next ideas like, oh, maybe I should do this now. We're just so much more connected to self through our emotions. So that's what I would say.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I totally agree. And I love that the metaphysical aspect of health is coming out more and more. And even though for many, it probably seems like a new idea, it's been well documented in Chinese medicine for thousands of years.
Yes.
The emotions that show up in different organs and stuff like that. So great share. Fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks so much for being on the show. And obviously, we've got to do it again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
No worries. We'll catch you soon. Hey, thanks for listening to the show. If you enjoyed this episode or learnt anything at all, the gift of your 5-star rating would be incredibly helpful. And what's even more powerful is if you write a review. You can do it below each episode on Spotify, every time an episode comes out, and inside Apple Podcast, simply find the main page of this show with all the episodes on it, scroll to the bottom, hit write a review, share your amazing feedback, and then hit send. It helps this show grow tremendously and allows me to successfully invite bigger and more famous guests each time we do the show. Thank you, thank you, thank you for helping us climb the charts, climb the algorithm, and help more people. Oh, and by the way, I have a short disclaimer as well. I just wanted to quickly remind you that the information provided on this podcast is for general informational purposes only. While we strive to bring you accurate and up-to-date content, it's important to note that a lot of this is mixed with opinions, stories, and ideas not supported by mainstream science or medicine. Any advice or suggestions should not be considered a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always consult a healthcare provider before making any decisions about the health and wellness of you and your family. Remember too that what works for one person may not work for another. another. And just as we promote on the show, each person is responsible for their own health decisions. Thank you for tuning into the How to Not Get Sick and Die podcast. And now, the next episode. Here it is.